say ah. It's time for Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Specializing in periodontics, implants, and regenerative techniques, Dr. Edelstein's practice is Atlanta's premier periodontal office, where dentistry is both an art and a science. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com. And now, Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. By the way, I love the name Sue Skipper. It just seems like it's like a stage name or something.
It's cutish.
But I've known other people whose last name is Skipper, too.
Yeah, there aren't very many Skippers. In the Buffalo phone book, you open it up, I'm related to every Skipper in that phone book.
Really?
In Atlanta, unless it's my brother, I'm related to none.
Now, from what I know about Buffalo, that's kind of like the name D'Angelo. That's a very common name in a place like Buffalo.
Skipper?
No, D'Angelo.
Oh, D'Angelo? Yeah. Yes.
Philadelphia? D'Angelo.
A lot of Irish. It's an immigrant city, for sure. Still has it. I love it. I do. I miss
it. Isn't it nice,
though?
You know, and the cuisine?
I just came back from Buffalo, and we ate our way through it every day. I mean, just everything it has to offer, you got to get it every day.
Good chicken wings.
Well, you know what? We invented
Buffalo
the chicken wings.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, Sue, in previous shows, you've commented that, you know, you get a lot of referrals from general dentists.
Yeah.
Okay. So perhaps their patient needs something more elaborate than what they can do, and so they refer patients to you.
Correct.
To Dr. Edelstein. One of the things that you mentioned was that you were very impressed by the quality of the dentistry of the dentists who refer their patients to you.
Yeah, we do. We work with some really good dentists in town. It's a privilege. It's more enjoyable for us. I mean, we do quality dentistry, and when we can set the stage for them to do their quality dentistry, it's really a beautiful marriage. The result is better in the long run. And so likewise, we appreciate being a part of their cases.
That's an important relationship, then.
It's a very important relationship.
You know, like a quarterback in the center, pitcher and catcher, if you know what I'm saying?
It's when it works, it's beautiful. And it's one thing that I do for Dr. Edelstein is serve as a liaison between he and the dentists that choose to work with us. And I love it. I mean, I just love it.
All right, so that begs my question today, because we're talking about corporate dentistry. And what I'm wondering is, in today's environment and this term corporate dentistry, and a lot of people don't know just yet what we're talking about when we say corporate dentistry, is it becoming more and more difficult for somebody to continue to put the patient's needs first ahead of anything else, Dr. Bruce Edelstein?
I feel quite privileged that I've been in practice for 30 years now. And for the past 30 years, I've been delighted to recommend the best possible treatment and help people have the best outcome and have a wonderful experience at the same time. And I've always felt that if I did that, then financial reward will follow rather than the other way around. So I put patients first and help them have good outcomes, good experiences, and then I've always been confident that the business end of it would follow.
Okay, I want to read something to you, and I think you both have seen this. It says, quote, "Drink the corporate Kool-Aid and you'll fit in," unquote. And this is from a provider, a former employee, from a place, it looks like it's from Florida.
Okay.
Okay, September 19th, 2014, fairly recent. So he says, the pros of being in corporate dentistry, the pros are that you have a job, it says, until your numbers drop. And then the cons, job security based on drinking the corporate Kool-Aid. So it says they follow the typical corporate dental model. Selling is their focus, not patient care, comfort, or appreciation. If you are a provider, your name will appear on a corporate tally sheet showing how much or how little you sell. Boy, as soon as I see that word sell,
it's tough to hear.
Yeah, my antenna go up. No feeling of long-term job security. Don't sell enough restorative or preventative. Poof, you're gone. If you are a used car salesman, you will fit in well. And I find that very scary.
Yes.
Is this commonplace today?
There are a lot of these types of dental outfits across our country. They've been around for a while. I worked for one in the late 80s. I didn't know at the time what it was. I left a very low-functioning office that I wasn't happy with. It was attractive to me because there were many people there, 6 dental hygienists, 10 dentists. Oh, and we have a pedodontist who can specialize with children. I worked with him on Fridays. It turned out not to be such a good experience. He didn't like kids.
And he was a pedodontist.
It's the truth. It was
a children's
very,
dentist.
He ruined a lot of children's first experience, and it was very sad. And after a year, I requested not to work with him any longer.
Really?
It was tough. We had periodontists who came in, latest equipment, and it filed for bankruptcy about 2 years later.
So what would you say was the root of the problem in this situation? Is it the profit motive? Is it
back then, and it still is a concern, we got our patients because this particular outfit or corporate dental chain signed a lot of contracts with local employers, Atlanta Board of Education. I could name a lot of big ones. And if they chose to come to our corporate office.
Because of the fee.
Because of they would get a discount.
Just discounted.
We signed a contract with their employer. If they used us, they would get a discount. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what's in your heart to do. It's you have to go by the corporate discount, and that's all you can
do. Or you won't last.
Or you won't last. You're not lasting. We filed bankruptcy 2 years later.
Well, now, why did that happen? If they're, you know, it seems like they had a pretty good thing going there from a financial standpoint.
More
you know?
Treatment coming out that cost more than the money coming in. You can only operate at a discount so long in the service industry.
All right, so let me ask you this then. So they had these contracts with, say, the schools or whoever, the government entities.
Lockheed was a large one.
Did they make a bad deal? Did they come in too cheap?
I don't know if there is such a thing as a good deal in making that type of contract.
But you know what I'm saying? Look, maybe you understand this too, Dr. Edelson. I think maybe both of you understand this, that sometimes you estimate what something is going to cost, what do you think it's going to cost, and then you say to yourself afterwards, gosh, I think I came in too low. I don't know how I'm going to be able to do it at this.
And
you have to live with it, I guess. But
a part of that model, and I'm going back only to my experience that I had for 3 short years in the 80s. I didn't stay there very long. Part of that business model is, well, if we do a filling, I'm just going to throw out an arbitrary fee, at $75 when normally it's a $100 service, guess what? We'll try to do them in shorter time periods and make it up in volume versus the quality of that filling. And that truly was the intent. We had shorter amounts of time to treat patients because we had to make it up in volume. That was the premise. And it just is very difficult to make that happen.
But this seems to be the way that medicine is going today. I think I've mentioned last week, you know, I've had the same general practitioner for years. He just retired, actually. I'm not sure. Well, he may surface again. He's a very good doctor. But he had his own office for years, and then he ended up selling it to a big entity whose name we all know. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Not going to say the name of it.
Sure.
And he went from being the head to an employee, just mm-hmm. like anybody else. And they ended up closing that office for whatever reason. It might have had something to do with the lease they had, whatever it was. And he opted to retire. Okay, so he may surface again. He may just have retired from that particular company for all I know.
I wonder if that decision was based on what happened to the practice.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I asked him a couple of questions about all this stuff, and he would never answer. He kind of demurred, and I respect him for that. You know, he wouldn't badmouth his employer, and he didn't say, hey, you know, give me your phone number because I'm going to surface somewhere else and you're going to be my patient. He followed the company line all the way, and, you know, with dignity and so on and so forth.
And to be truthful, Dr. Edelstein can attest to this, it's difficult to be a business owner, much less the good service provider, in our case, periodontics. It's kind of attractive. Let me have someone else do the business.
You know, he told me that was the big advantage.
Sure.
He didn't have to do all the billing. He hated the paperwork and the billing, and he just loved.
Well, then, along with that may go the hiring and the training. And working on the internal systems to make things flow properly. So I have found in these types of environments, there's a lot more than just the billing that you give up to a third party, the owner of the practice.
By the way, I'm digressing, something I have a habit of doing, as you know by now. Is the billing, the paperwork, does it take a lot of time, a lot of your time that you could be spending with patients?
Well, not my time, because I hired someone to do it. But it does take a lot of someone else's time, so there's no question about it. It's not just the billing. It's the billing and the filing
for insurance,
filing
whatever.
The paperwork. And what happens today is, you know, you file to help them get their insurance benefit, and then the insurance company comes back and they wanted the x-rays. So we try to be proactive, and we'll send the next claim from the same exact company with the x-rays, and then they'll come back and they'll say, oh, we need to know the diagnosis when we already gave that to them on the original form. So then we give them now we're more proactive, and we give them the x-rays and the diagnosis, and they'll come back, and now the new one is they'll ask for the operative notes, because there's a checklist, and they want more paperwork back. So the third parties, the insurance companies, are creating more work, because what do you think happens if something gets lost in the mail, for instance, or electronically? Then the claim doesn't get paid.
But also sounds like, this is just my layman's, my antenna up here, they're buying time.
Yes. Well, they earn interest on it's called the float. They earn interest on it. So the more time, the more trivial things they can ask for, then the more time they have with the making interest on the money that they should have paid out on the patient's behalf.
All right, we're right up against a break here. I have a question I want to ask you folks, and that is, if you've seen this, we had somebody here at the radio station that was a doctor. He was an MD. He worked for a practice that was owned by a nurse.
Hmm.
And this is the first time I'd ever heard of such a thing. A doctor working for a practice that's owned by somebody other than a doctor and an MD. And it seemed almost kind of, you know, I grew up, you know, up there in Philadelphia a long time ago, and we revered our doctors and dentists. You know, they had doctor in front of their name, and we revered them. And it seems like there's just been a total, it's like a breakdown in that. And to the point where now, you know, he's working for a nurse who owns the practice. Never heard of such a thing. So I want to ask you about that when we come back. You're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Visit their website, mygumdoc.com, mygumdoc.com. Back with more of Open Wide in just a moment.
And now, back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Their office, by the way, the name of the practice is Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Okay, and it's located on Peachtree Road, right across the street from Piedmont Hospital. Plenty of parking available, by the way.
Plenty of parking.
That you pay for.
That I pay for, and there are reserved spots right up front.
Excellent. Right across the street from Piedmont Hospital, right next to the Darlington, which a lot of people know because of the population. Sue, you told me, you know, you've been in this town, what, 37 years, is that what you told me?
About that long,
and you moved down from
that
Buffalo?
That sounds right, yeah.
You remember the Darlington being kind of a hip...
I didn't necessarily experience that. I was too young, but a lot of our patients...
you had friends who did.
Our patients. When we moved to that location, our patients started telling us, you know, I used to live in this apartment complex at the end of our street where our practice is. We'd walk up, that was called Pill Hill, which now has been named Cardiac Hill because of the Peachtree Road Race.
Mm-hmm.
But they called it Pill Hill back in the 70s, and it was Party Central on Peachtree at the Darlington.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, yeah.
So that gives folks a good fix on where you're located.
Yeah.
All right, so I want you to weigh in on something that I mentioned just before the break, and that is we're seeing medical practices that are owned by... This was a practice that specialized in the removal of varicose veins, by the way.
Mm.
And this particular doctor happened to have been a vascular surgeon, actually, I believe. He might have even been a heart surgeon, mm-hmm. you know, thoracic surgeon. And here he was working for a practice that was owned by a nurse. And it just seems to me like it's just kind of, it's like a breakdown in the prestige of the profession. Dr. Edelstein, you're a doctor. You're inside the profession. Can you opine on that?
I think it is a breakdown in the profession. There's no question about it. We take a lot of pride in the care that we provide, and we try to, as I mentioned, deliver the best care and have help patients have the best experiences. And we have it's not uncommon for us to see patients for regular cleaning visits that have been patients of ours for 25, 30 years. So we know about them. We know about their families. We know about their yearly trip to the beach, whatever it is. We have relationships with them. And I think when the corporation, when these hedge funds or investors get involved in buying practices, and the providers, the dentist or the physicians for that matter, are employees, there is a higher level of turnover. There probably is less satisfaction on the job, and their long-term relationship is not the same. So I think there is some impairment of that relationship.
And they have to, well, we used the term before, they have to sell more.
There's
always the pressure to sell as much as you can, because if you don't sell enough, I'm referring now to this article that I mentioned earlier in this broadcast. There's a tally sheet in this particular case. This is a corporate dental group. Corporate tally sheet showing how much or how little you sell. No matter if you don't sell enough restorative or preventative, I guess that's the more lucrative stuff. Poof, you're gone. Well, I mean, it's very hard to operate under that kind of pressure, you know, and put the patient's needs first.
I think it's extremely difficult to put the patient's needs first. I can't imagine practicing in that manner whatsoever. And I'm not going to say that, you know, actually what's happened is the debt load of a dentist, because I know dentistry a lot better than medicine, so I can't speak about medicine, but in dentistry, a lot of these graduates are graduating $500,000 in debt or close to it. So they have what essentially is a very significant house payment for the next 20 years just to pay off their student loans. So they get out of school and they don't have the ability to get a loan and buy a practice. So they go in, they have these deep pockets that have practices with positions ready to roll. They go into these positions because they have no choice. And some of them are there for a significant length of time. A lot of them can't wait to leave. So that's why there's a lot of turnover, because they leave as soon as they can. And I'm not going to say that any of these folks that are in this situation are bad dentists. They just may not be in a position to do good dentistry.
Correct.
because of third-party constraints on them.
Right.
To do good dentistry.
Well, if you owe $200,000 or $500,000 coming out of school, I mean, right there you can see the opportunity for problems.
Sure.
There are problems. And these corporate entities that own these practices, they take, from what I understand, 20% off the top. And that's one of the reasons why they have investors. Some of them are hedge funds. And that's one of the reasons why they put strain on the employees to produce. And it's I could see how it could be very difficult to practice the best dentistry. The other thing is they many times will either own their own dental lab, or they'll have relationships with dental labs, and they may not necessarily be good dental labs. They're just less expensive because they have no choice but to look for a less expensive lab. And that's a big part of dentistry, the lab that someone works with.
And often I take it the person or persons at the top are not necessarily dentists. It might be.
And with the layman. One I worked for in the late 80s, no one at the top was a dentist.
Late 80s. Huh? How long has this been going on?
I would say probably about that time it became popular for insurance companies to sign contracts with groups like this. And that was, I think that is about the right time, probably.
The insurance companies, are they culprits in this, would you say?
Probably. Because they're looking for providers to provide it.
Help them save money.
To provide discounted services. And a lot of these corporate entities will fill that void to provide discounted services.
All right, so I want to ask you this. If you go to one of these corporate, and again, when we talk about corporate dentistry, we're talking about dental offices that are owned by some entity somewhere. Okay, and they have many, many offices, perhaps, maybe all over the country, all over the U.S., and that's how kind of it works, okay?
Correct.
A conglomerate, if you will.
Yes.
Okay. Now, some of them, I understand, have offices where there are several specialists in the same location.
Mm-hmm.
I think you mentioned this before,
mm-hmm.
Sue.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a pedodontist, we had a periodontist,
we had an orthodontist.
All in the same location.
We had an endodontist who specializes in root canals, all in the same location.
Yeah, but that person may travel from office to office.
Yes, our specialties, all of our specialists came to our office 1 to 2 days a week.
Now, was there a temptation for, you know, I'm glad you're here because you've been there.
I've worked
so
there.
So you know what it's all about.
Yeah.
Is there a temptation? Let's suppose a person needs to have, they go to a general dentist,
mm-hmm.
get an exam.
Mm-hmm.
And the dentist in this corporate environment sees that they need periodontal work.
Correct.
Or at least tells them that they need periodontal work. Is there a temptation? If there's a periodontist right then and there, is there a temptation to say, hey, let's go into the other room and get this thing started? Without
then
giving the person a chance to
choose?
Yeah.
Well, typically the way that it works, that person is in that office already to begin with because their dental insurance has promoted this special arrangement. If you will select this place to do your dentistry, you will enjoy less out-of-pocket expense. And so the model, there is no incentive for the dentist under that roof to refer outside of that entity. They have that signed agreement with that patient's insurance.
Are most of the patients in that situation where, say, they're teachers or they're...
Mm-hmm.
But what about people who just from the general public? Would they go to this
they could,
type of practice?
But
don't they advertise?
Yes.
Yeah.
So why couldn't somebody like me, okay, I'm not a teacher, I don't work for the government, I have a small company here, would I be able to go to them?
I'm sure. I'm sure you would be able to.
We took non-contracted patients. Sure.
And what I'm guessing is that a lot of it just comes from ignorance on the part of the patient. And I don't mean that in a bad sense. They just don't know any better. They think, you know, some of them think a dentist is a dentist is a dentist.
Right.
If you jumped out of airplanes and you needed a parachute, would you go to a discounted service to pack that parachute into the backpack?
No, absolutely not.
So why would dentistry or medicine, for that matter, be any different?
Because they don't understand that, I guess.
Yes.
Is what it is. So you know, you went to Emory and you went to Cornell and you went to University of Pennsylvania. So you went to three of the top institutions in the country. But the general level of competence is far below really what one would experience in your office. I mean, let's face it, this is the way it's become in our society. Everything is getting Walmartized.
Well, one thing too, listen, I love a bargain as much as the next person. I love the Nordstrom rack. I love the DSW. If I can find something really great at a flea market, that is the thrill of the hunt for me. But we're not talking about a purse that may have cost Michael Kors $25 to make, and then because he's Michael Kors, or any designer, and then they have a markup, and then it's sold at Saks Fifth Avenue, so there's even more of a markup, and then Saks didn't sell it that year, so they found an outlet to put it in, and now it's been reduced half, and if I'm really lucky, I got a Scout Mob or an app on my phone that gave me another 30%. That's a good that has a markup from day one. The service industry is different, and that includes dentistry, where I get my haircut. I don't go to Haircuts R Us for $15. In the service industry, and particularly the medical and dental profession of the service industry, there's no such thing as a bargain.
But I still think many people don't understand that.
They don't understand it.
It's just as good at Walmart as it is, you know,
correct,
at Saks Fifth Avenue.
Correct. It can't be done.
The most shocking example, which is a little more extreme than this even, is the bizarre catastrophes we've seen from people that go to Costa Rica for a Costa Rican dental vacation.
Oh.
And now they have to come back and have everything redone.
Yeah. Mm.
And that is a little more extreme than this, but
sure.
But it is an example of someone looking for a bargain.
I still wonder, though, if they've got one of these situations where there's several specialists there, if there isn't a temptation for them to try to get you into that specialist right away before you have an opportunity to ponder it and think about it, maybe get a second opinion somewhere from somebody independent who has no axe to grind, if you know what I'm saying.
I think there might be a conflict. I couldn't agree more. By the way, we were thinking about Chew on It as a title for the show, but we decided...
Oh, really?
That was an earlier title.
We decided that Open Wide is...
It happens to be a very good title.
Might be a little better.
You made a good decision. Wise choice. Right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'd like to ask you a couple of things from an article that I have here. It's written by Dr. Stephanie McGann, DMD. It says, Corporate Dentistry, What's the Difference? Plenty. So we want to discuss this article when we come back. You're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Visit mygumdoc.com, mygumdoc.com. Oh, by the way, I want to remind you folks, Thursday, September 10th, Dr. Edelstein will be delivering a lecture to the general public. It's free of charge. It's going to be at Brio Restaurant, which is on Peachtree in the Peach Shopping Center. Beautiful restaurant. Wonderful restaurant. It's at 6 p.m. Admission is free, but you need to sign up. You can either call them or you can go online. Go to MyGumDoc.
Yeah, go to our website. There's a form there. There's more detail on the page for Brio and for the implant lecture.
And it's, again, free of charge. Thursday, September 10th, everything you need to know and want to know about dental implants. Back with more of Open Wide with Sue and Dr. Bruce Edelstein in just a moment.
And now, back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. You know, maybe I should introduce you, in a sense, to our audience, Sue Skipper. You know, what your qualifications are, your background. Well, we all know that Dr. Edelstein is a periodontist, board certified. Mm-hmm. I mentioned before, you have outstanding credentials. When I go to a doctor, by the way, I put you in the same, you know, situation as an MD, probably higher because you're a specialist than, say, a generalist. You know, the qualifications are very important to me, where they went to school. You know what I'm saying? If I go to an MD who graduated from Emory, let's say, or, you know, where else did you go? Cornell, you know, Penn. To me, that's very impressive, and that's very comforting to me because I feel like I'm sophisticated enough to know that these are important things.
Sure.
Whereas if he went to school in Grenada, isn't it Grenada, where some of the doctors went, I don't feel quite so good about it, you know? I have a friend, a veterinarian friend. I haven't seen him in many years. He actually was accepted to medical school. He was accepted to Meharry Medical School in Tennessee, but he wanted to be a veterinarian. They couldn't get into veterinarian school because very competitive. This is 35 years ago. He ended up going to veterinary school in Italy. And I do believe he's a very good veterinarian, even though he couldn't get into an American veterinarian school. But I still think it makes you look askance, or at least if you have any kind of knowledge or sophistication about these kinds of things, to understand that in general, and there are a lot of exceptions, a doctor coming out of Emory or Penn or Cornell, you know, the latter both in the Ivy League, to me, it's a different category than somebody coming out of, I'm not going to mention other names, but some state university somewhere where the admission standards are easier than they are to a Penn or a Cornell or an Emory. Would you weigh in on that, Dr. Edelstein?
I just feel privileged that I was able to go to the places I went and be trained and had the best mentors in the country and even the world.
Is what I'm saying correct, though?
I don't know. Maybe not necessarily as a rule, but I just feel, you're not going to get me to answer it, by the way, because I do have friends that went to other places and they got excellent training.
Let me ask it a different way. Are you not impressed if you go to a doctor somewhere and you see, you graduated with honors, right?
I did.
Okay. You see somebody's diploma up there that says Cornell University. I happen to know Cornell is one of the best in the nation, okay? Penn, I'm from Philadelphia.
Right.
I know Penn, Ivy League, top in the nation. And Emory, you know, people don't understand, you know, when if you're up in Philadelphia and you hear somebody went to Emory, that's a very big deal.
Sure.
I think because Emory's in our own backyard, sometimes we don't appreciate the kind of quality that the reputation it enjoys elsewhere.
Excellent. Yeah.
All right, but I can't. I'm just saying. I'm just making a comment here. If I see Emory and what is it, Cornell and Penn up on the wall, Sue, are you going to help me here?
It is impressive. I may be biased, being inside and having worked in the healthcare profession all of my life. I know it's not the only thing. There's many factors that go into a good healthcare provider. Education can catch my eye, but just because they have the education, sometimes they don't have the heart or the passion. And heart and passion will drive you year 10, 20, 30 a lot more than what your professors were saying back in school. It's the combination package is the most impressive of all.
Yeah. Look, I understand what you're saying. You know, I hire people here too. And
yeah.
I've had better experiences with people graduating from Kennesaw State than Harvard.
It can be true. I mean, it really
can
be true.
They finance their own education.
Sure.
You know, mom and dad didn't pay for it.
Sure.
They work their way through school. They understand hard work. They appreciate everything they have.
Right.
They didn't skip classes. You know why? Because they paid for their own classes.
Yeah.
So they wanted to get as much out of it as they could. So I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's their heart. Is that so much a product of their learning institution? It could be their heart. I picked my hygiene school because they were good, but they happened to be 10 minutes from my house.
Tell us about your education.
Oh, but it's changed a little bit. Dental hygiene is an associate's degree. It can be a bachelor's. I think in most states it's not required for it to be a bachelor's. In my day, you could go the straight full 2 years, and I did, and it was hard and tough, and I cried every semester, and mom and dad just let me drop out. I can't do this, and they said, yes, you can. And at the end of 2 years, when I was done, I was glad I did it in two and not for three.
And
they wanted me
to
be the dentist, but I didn't want to go to school 8 or 12 years like Dr. Edelstein did. Mm.
And you would have been an excellent dentist.
Looking back, coulda, woulda, shoulda, I wish I had. But at that time, as Dr. Edelstein, you always say you make the best decision you can with the information you have at that time.
You
want to
know, we said this a couple of weeks ago. But
it just wasn't appealing.
Sometimes for the patient, you know, the hygienist, that's my point of contact. That's my...
It can be.
That sometimes that's my confidant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, hey, can you make sure when the doctor comes in, can you make sure that he or she, you know, does this, that, or the other thing? And I go, yeah, I'll make sure. You
yeah.
Know? Sure.
It can be. Absolutely. A very important link back to the dentist.
Yeah. So, Dr. Edelstein, I want to just stay on this for 1 minute here. So, we no longer have a dental school at Emory.
Yes.
Has that changed the landscape here? Is it, in other words, where there are fewer dentists perhaps here in Atlanta as a result of there not being a dental school here in Emory?
Maybe, but Atlanta is a very desirable place. So, there have been a lot of people coming to Atlanta from other states and other schools, quite frankly. And then the other thing is Medical College of Georgia, which is now called Georgia Regents. They've changed the name 2-3 times, but it used to be
MCG.
Used to be MCG, dental program now, and they've filled the gap rather significantly. They've increased enrollment. They filled a gap that Emory had, and a lot of their graduates come from Atlanta originally or will migrate here.
When you were in dental school, I had a friend who was in dental school up in Philly, and I remember him telling me he had to actually go out and find certain people to so that he could do certain procedure, who needed a particular procedure done.
You mean to pass the boards?
I guess it was. Yes. I think he actually had to pay somebody.
You did, yeah.
He found somebody like on the street or something, and he paid the guy.
I'll tell you what I did, because there was a certain percentage of people that they would say they would come, and then they wouldn't show up that day, and you had this exam you had to take in a real person. This was here in Atlanta, and I remember when I had two or three people lined up, I had a $100 bill, and I tore it in half, and I gave them half, and I said, when I see the light in your eyes that morning, here, I'll give you the other half of the $100 bill to make sure that they showed up that day for the board exam.
Is it hard to find people? With a particular condition? Perhaps?
Yeah. You need a certain situation so that you can show the state board examiners your proficiency. So it wasn't that difficult, but you really wanted them to show up, because if they didn't, you were in a bind.
In dental hygiene, our board patient was just a yuck mouth.
Someone
really? Who had a dirty mouth and needed a good cleaning.
Wow.
It wasn't hard to find. Dentistry, they're a little bit more selective.
All right, we've got to take yet another break. We're going into our last segment. We're talking about corporate dentistry this week. An article by Dr. Stephanie McGann says, corporate dentistry, what's the difference? And she says, plenty. So we're going to talk about that, the so-called dental mills, and a PBS report that airs concerns that, well, profit trumps patient needs. And by the way, it's not just dentistry. I think we're seeing it in a lot of areas.
Yes.
Today, we may be with the Affordable Care Act. Maybe we'll see more of it. I don't know. But, I mean, it's entirely possible that, you know, costs are going up and, you know, we're trying to provide these for people who don't have the money, subsidies, so on and so forth. And maybe this is just one of the unfortunate byproducts of our society today. You're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Visit mygumdoc.com, mygumdoc.com. Back with more in just a moment.
And now, back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Visit mygumdoc.com. And the name of their practice is Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Are you DMD or DDS? I don't remember.
DDS.
Oh, so that tells me something about your age, perhaps?
No, there are some schools today that grant DMD degrees. It's a synonymous degree.
DDS, right? Degrees?
And DDS, yeah. It means the same thing.
Well, isn't DDS a little older, though, generally, or is it?
Not necessarily.
They kind of change it somewhere to DMD? No?
I think a few schools did change to DMD, but there are still plenty of schools that grant DDSs.
How would you say, you know, because we're talking about these corporate mills, as they call them, these dental mills, and it's not just in dentistry. We see them in other professions as well. You know, I've told my wife, you know, I'd hate to open up a store today of almost any nature because you're going to get clobbered by the Walmarts of the world. You know, I used to have a radio station in a small town, you know, and they had a square, you know, the public square there, the town square, and they had these little shops. One by one, they all got eaten up by, well, Walmart, among others.
Bookstores.
It was really hard.
Our old Oxford Books. That was
exactly
a terrible loss to us.
That was right up the street from you.
Yeah.
Was it Oxford too?
Weren't there three Oxford Books? One in Peachtree Battle, one in Far Road.
That's the one near you.
Then there was the comic book specialty place.
Yes.
It was sad to see that go.
I still like, you know, a bookstore.
Yeah, a real bookstore.
And you can really,
have some coffee, listen
not
to someone
some big
come
chain.
In and play guitar, and two guys with beards are playing chess in the corner. I mean, that's what you want.
Well put. Dr. Bruce Edelstein, so we're talking about these corporate mills and the pressure that the dentists are under and the turnover that they have because, well, if you don't reach a certain goal, you're out, so on and so forth. What would it be like for you today to open up as a sole practitioner as you are now? You know, you've been in business for how many years have you been in practice?
30 years.
All right, 30 years. What would it be like for you now? Would it be similar or would it be quite different?
I think it would be more difficult. There's no question about it. First of all, I think getting a loan would be more difficult because the banks clearly will look at someone with more scrutiny. When I went into practice, if you had a dental or a medical degree, you got a loan, and you didn't need 100% security. And today, they wouldn't do that. It would have to be secured.
Why is that? Are there some who have gone out? They've gone under, and
I'm sure. You know, it's the same thing with. Home mortgages today. I mean, banks are looking at people with greater scrutiny than they did years ago because they need to have some guarantee that they're going to get paid.
You know, my daughter's buying a house. They're moving to Philadelphia. They're buying a home in Philly. And it hasn't gone through yet because it's a short sale, apparently. And these people who own the home, they've been bankrupt several times. My daughter said eight times. But I mean, so several times, let's say. And I said, that's amazing. How'd they ever get a loan for $350,000?
Sure.
You know, given that kind of a background.
Yeah.
And here they are in a short sale situation too. And it's holding up the whole thing because the bank is being very careful now to make sure that my daughter can qualify, you know, for the mortgage. They don't want to make the same mistake they made before.
It would be the same thing for a dentist, but you have to remember the average dentist is graduating $200,000-$400,000 in debt. Now,
look, you're talking to a realist here, okay? I'm one of the most realistic people you'll know. And if somebody owes $200,000 or $300,000 coming out of dental school, and I've even heard, I think we've heard $500,000, I think, has been mentioned.
Not uncommon.
I'm sorry, it's going to be very hard for that person to stick to their principles when they've got so much debt. First of all, they come out of school, and I think a dentist deserves to make a very good living, first of all, because they're well-educated, and they have a skill that very few people have.
I have no problem with that.
And they deserve to make a good living.
I have no problem with that.
But it's going to take them forever to pay off that debt.
Yeah.
And another thing that's changed is that debt, by and large, is not deductible.
Mm.
When I got out of school, student loan debt was fully deductible.
Right. Just like credit card debt was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey,
yes.
The good old days.
Those were the good old days.
Oh, but I love that now.
No.
Hey, that's for another show. Okay, well, remember that, credit card debt. Okay.
Absolutely. So there are challenges today. And I give these young women and men credit. They have a lot of big challenge in front of them in going into practice, and they have no choice. Many of them being in corporate environments, and some of them, their heart's in the right place and everything, you know. As I mentioned before, I'm not going to say that these are bad folks or bad dentists. They just may not be in a position to do good dentistry if they have to use a certain lab, or they have to work with a certain assistant that may not be as competent as they would like.
You know, I feel like it, you see it in other professions as well. You know, a pharmacist, you know, they go to pharmacy school. It's not easy to get into. It's not easy to get through. They come out, you know, they're very well trained. Maybe they went to MCG or whatever it's called now, you know, pharmacy school. And here they are working at Walmart. They're, you know, Walmart's got a pharmacy and they're the pharmacist at Walmart. And it just, I can't help it. I come from the old school. It just seems kind of schlock to me, you know?
Yeah.
But this is what we see today. If somebody is in one of the corporate mill situations, let's suppose it's a general dentist, and they happen to know you, let's say, and they want to send that patient to you.
Yes.
Because they want that patient to get the best care possible from the highest level professional that this dentist knows.
Yes.
Can they generally do that?
They can. It tends to be a challenge in certain situations. We do work with a few very fine dentists in these environments, and they do refer to us. And I'm very supportive and very grateful to have those opportunities, and I try to help them in the best way possible. But they have some challenges to overcome. I've worked with one dentist for many, many years, and he had to sell his practice, and he went into a corporate environment, and we happened to be working on an implant case. And I put these implants in, and they were healthy and they were wonderful, but it was imposed upon him to use a certain lab and use certain abutment materials that weren't necessarily made by the manufacturer that made the implants. So it was a very challenging case for him to do it right. Thank God it came out. I saw the patient. The patient was doing great, and it looks like the case is fine. But this poor guy spent a lot of extra time and a lot of extra anxiety because he worried he had to use a certain, it was imposed on him to use a certain lab and use certain materials. And fortunately the case came out fine and looks terrific, but I can see that as a huge challenge, you know. And I don't know if he would do it again. I don't know if he would want to have that stress again. Because it was so stressful. I had to meet him for breakfast twice. He had to come over to the office twice to talk about the case. And it was challenging for him to get this case done in a proper fashion.
We're almost out of time. Do you, Dr. Edelstein, do you sometimes have a situation where you get to meet somebody who's a dental student? Maybe a friend of yours says, you know, my nephew, say, or my niece is a dental student. Would you talk to them and just maybe give them some advice? Is it, do you get to do that? Is it enjoyable?
Oh, it happens all the time, and I love it. We frequently will have people observe. They'll come to the office and observe, and if they, after about 15 minutes, if they didn't pass out, then I'll try to help them get into dental school or whatever. But we did have someone, a relative came, and her knees got wobbly, and we had to get her a seat to sit down.
Yeah.
But isn't it great, though, if, I'm willing to bet there are plenty of dentists out there who wish they had talked to somebody like you, not necessarily you, but somebody like you, and gotten a little bit more information first before they chose a particular path in their career, just to get some more information mm-hmm. so that they could make the right decision. But they didn't, and so therefore now they're kind of pigeonholed into a particular area from whence they can't get out readily.
I was in a forum, privileged to be involved in a forum in the spring, led by a nationally known, probably one of the best known dental consultants and educators, a fellow by the name of Imtiaz Manji. And he identified three challenges in the future of dentistry and the ability to provide quality dentistry as time goes on. Those challenges are managed care dentistry, for the reasons we discussed, corporate dentistry, for the reasons we discussed, and the inability or lack of interest in referring to specialists. And this program elegantly addressed these three concerns and tried to encourage young dentists to buck the trend in these three trends and go in a very positive direction in their futures.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, we're out of time, unfortunately. I've got a lot more questions, and I've written some notes here, but we're going to have to address them in a future show. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Visit mygumdoc.com, and I want to remind you folks, Thursday, September 10th, Dr. Edelstein is going to deliver a lecture. It's a seminar about implants, dental implants, which unfortunately a lot of us need. Most of us don't know much about them, so this is going to be a very informative free session, but you should sign up in advance by going to mygumdoc.com. It's Thursday, September 10th at 6 p.m. at Brio, a wonderful restaurant on Peachtree in the Peach Shopping Center. I've had a great time today. I hope you two have as well, and I thank you both.
We sure have.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
This has been Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Specializing in periodontics, implants, and regenerative techniques, Dr. Edelstein's practice is Atlanta's premier periodontal office, where dentistry is both an art and a science. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com. Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein, Tuesdays at noon, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.